Okay, we continue in the Rambam. We're in Perek Hilchos Shmita V'Yovel Perek Ches Halacha Tazayin, Chapter 8, Law 16. The last halacha dealt with, even though if somebody is suspect for one type of avera, it doesn't mean he's suspect for another type of avera. The discussion was, even though he's suspect for not keeping the Shemitah laws, he shouldn't be suspected for not giving Maaser Sheni or versed, because there's different reasons for this. We continue that same idea in the next few halachas. Tazayin, let's say, achoshet al taharas. If a person is suspect for not following the laws of selling food in a state of purity. Now again, this is not biblical tumah. We're talking about rabbinic tumah. I don't want to get into the details of this, but certain tumas that are rabbinic, such as the tumah on foods or the tumah on hands, why we wash our hands and things like that. So what did this person do? So there were righteous people who wanted to buy food that was of the holiest nature with no rabbinic issues. So what happened was they would go to people who would sell them. So let's say this fellow sold tameh food as tahar food. Okay, so this was a guy who was suspect for not keeping these laws of tumah and tahara. So even though he's suspect on that, and we wouldn't trust him and wouldn't help him in these areas, still ain't a chashed law ala ma'aser v'ala shvi'is. We still would not suspect him for not for transgressing the ma'aser sheni halachas or the shmita halachas, just because he's bad in the area of tumah. Why? Because sha'ochal hatomei hazeh, the person who eats food in an improper state, shemacharo, that he sold in becheskas Torah, that it was kosher, einam etamei achem, doesn't make other people tomei, elam edev resovim, only rabbinically. So, I mean, not minimizing it, but in his eyes, it's only a rabbinic problem. So, okay, so rabbinic things I'm not so careful about. But the issues of Maaser Sheni and Shemitah are biblical. Even though we suspect a fellow in rabbinic areas, we have no right to suspect him in biblical areas, because that he'll be much more worried and doesn't want to sin on that level. Now, Yud Zayin tells another room that even though a person is suspected and he would sin in this particular area, even though we can't trust him for what he has to be dealing with, and therefore we can't trust him that he's not selling Shemitah crops and saving them and things like that. But still, Nemenhu al Shalachem, if he would testify for another person and say that another person, his crops are okay or whatever, he'd be trustworthy on that. Why? Because Chazaka Sheinarim Chotelachem, because we have a Chazak person who won't sin for other people's benefits. He'll sin for his benefit, but to sin for somebody else's benefit, why bother? Lefika Chachoshid al Dover, even though the guy is suspected for himself in a certain area, still Dona Meido, he can still judge, as it were, in those areas, or even testify in these areas. In other words, for us to just trust him, what he's saying in this area, it would be believed, because there's no reason to assume otherwise. Then there's other issue. You have to realize, can you accept a witness if he does certain averos? So how do we deal with that? But in general, the general idea is, if it's not relating to him, we will believe him. That's the general rule he's saying, yeah.
So if somebody only breaks Shabbos rabbinic laws, then we're okay to eat in his restaurant? Like, is that, I don't understand what the,
Again, you'd have to look at every situation and know how people feel about certain things. And you have to know what in our times is what people would say, this is important to me and this is not important to me. So this is what you need. You need you need rabbis who are attuned to the door to know what's going on. So for example, when we were dealing, in more Kirov-like scenarios in the past, and we're dealing with, can you trust your in-laws if they, for example, the tzedukim. The tzedukim, we didn't trust their mitzvah observance, but the Gemara says, but whatever they adhere to, they really kept. We believe they really kept, even though they didn't keep a lot of things, but whatever we know they kept. So that was in the times of the tzedukim, where they knew that they kept it. So we'd have to know, so now Chazal are telling us here regarding this era of a choshen, what he could be believing that. So now we need Rabbonim to paskin for us. So, okay, the classic question is, can I eat? Somebody invited me for Shabbos. They really don't keep Shabbos, but they kosher their home and they keep Shabbos and they keep kosher very much. Can I eat in this house? So, there's a quick one. So, you have to know each case, each situation, how serious the people are and what they're doing and this and that. And quite, we were told, well, many, many years ago, we asked Rav Shlomo Miller this, maybe 25 years ago, if people really, if you really believe that they're serious about their kashrus, can you accept their kashrus? He says, yes, if you feel that they've really studied and they've worked hard and they, that even though they're not religious in other areas, but he also added, you know, to help for Kiruv Rechokim, for that, for the situation of Kiruv to do that, he allowed it. Maybe he wouldn't allow it in general. So that's why if a person is not a Shomer Shabbos, the COR will not give the guy a Hesher unless there's a Mashgiach, if there's meat involved, because we can't trust him for that. So these are general rules, and you'd have to apply them, you know, very carefully in every situation you're dealing with.
I think the Rambam also said, well, in English, I'm not sure. Suspect.
No, suspect means he was caught.
Oh, really?
Now, yeah, that's suspect means he was caught. Not that, oh, he doesn't look so religious, I'll suspect him. No, we caught him in the past. He did it.
Oh, okay.
Right? That's what a choshed is. It's not just...
it's a common translation.
Yeah. Okay, Yurches. Okay, it's a little tricky here, this one. Hakohanim... Chashurim al hashvis. Okay, Sam, you're not going to like this halacha. But we suspect Kohanim that they will eat and sell perish hashvis after the time of the burning. You know, just because the guy's a Kohen, well, he's a scholar, let me just assume he's a tzaddik. No, we have reasons to suspect them in general. Lefi Sheim Omri, because they could say, Hoil vatrumos mutaras lanu. Since truma in general, truma, a Kohen eats truma, truma gedoyla, or trumas mice, or whatever, and chala is also called truma, the commentaries say. Kohen eats truma. What happens if a Yisrael eats truma? Misa b'dei shamayim. Death penalty of the hands of heaven. So what do you see already? Kohanim have a separate, a very special status. They can eat things that other people can't eat. Right? So now a Kohen, now I would assume this is not a scholarly Kohen. I'm assuming we're talking about ignorant Kohanim. Because a scholarly Kohen, we wouldn't suspect him at all. But ignorant Kohanim, we have great reason to be suspicious. So they figure like this, I can eat Truma and a regular Yisrael cannot. So Afal Pi Shehena Surim Alazur Misa. If a Zor, a stranger, eats it, they chayv Misa de Shemaim, and I can eat, everything's fine. Whoa, look at me, I'm a special status. So now they're going to make the a fortiori argument. Kal v'choymer perish shvis. So all the more so I could eat shvis, let's say after the zman ha-biur or whatever, because that's only prohibited to eat it rabbinically. Not more than that. So okay, so Yidden can't eat truma, which is chayv misa, and I can eat it. So you say I'm already special status. So I guess other Yidden who can't eat shmita crops after month, but I could, because that's where they could make that mistake. Therefore, we have to be very careful to not allow a Kohen to be in a situation where he could have a lot of food and it would fall into a situation where it could very likely be after this man beer, because he doesn't want to lose all that food that he has. So now, of course, you know, what's the halacha? With that, we have to get into the next halacha to understand this well. So what happens if you have a truma falls into a bundle of crops? What's the law? You can't tell them apart. So what's the laws in terms of beetle? What's the number we're looking for? 1 to 100 is the number. If one or not. Now what happens if you have 100 times? Can you eat the whole thing?
You went away?
You have to give one, the one to the Kohen. Okay? Now, what if it has one to under 100? So now it's wrecked it all up. So what do you do with it now? So you can sell it to the Kohanim, except the one that should go to the Kohen. One goes to the Kohen free, but you sell the rest to the Kohen, because it's all mixed up with Truma. You're not going to get a great price for it, because selling Truma never fetches a high price, because small market. That's the general halacha.
He knows you have to sell.
Okay, now that we have the general halacha, so now let's just plug this same. So in a normal year, that's what happens. One falls into 100, so you take one and give it to the Kohen, everything else is fine. But if one falls into less, then everything is possible, as it were, and I got to sell to the Kohen. Now, what if now we're in a Shemitah year now, and now that Truma, it's all Shemitah food, let's say, and it's one thing of Truma falls into another thing of non-Truma, so now we have the same halachas, but how much crops are you going to give to this Kohen now? who already are suspicious that they're going to keep things after the time of the burning. So that's how this halacha fits in. Lefikach sa'a truma shenafla lamea sa'a shal perishvis. If one sa'a of truma falls into 100 sa'a of shmita crops, and that, so what does that do? So tala, you take it out, that one saw from that, give it to the Kohen, as that's considered truma, and then you can keep the rest. How, and then, and we're not concerned with anything else, because we're not concerned you're going to eat it after this man biur, because really you owe that to the Kohanim. That one amount goes to the Kohen, and you can't hold it back. Because if you don't give it to a Kohen, you haven't made your stuff kosher. It really belongs to the Kohanim. You can't withhold that which belongs to a Kohen just because I'm going, oh, I can't give it to you. Maybe you can keep it for something, but you have a chiyuv to give it to the Kohen. So you can't get around that chiyuv. While other things, you know, selling things to a Kohen, you might say, well, I don't want to sell to him because he's going to mess it up. But he is really entitled to it, so you have to give it to him. On the other hand, what if nafala pachas mimea? But what if it falls into less than 100? Now, everything is entirely prohibited to strangers. Now, normally, what would you do? You'd sell it to a Kohen at a cheap price, and one saw the Kohen would keep. But now, what it's going to do, if you're going to give that much to the Kohen, what likely is going to happen? If the Kohen's getting 60 times an amount that falls in, it's a good chance he's going to keep it after this man beer. So therefore, yirkavu hakol, let the whole thing rot. You don't give it to the Kohen, you can't eat it, let it rot. You don't sell to the Kohen, which would normally be the halacha, except for the one saw, b'chol meduma, with all that's been mixed up, since they're suspect on shvis, we would be concerned for that.
You can't add to the...
No, done is done. Okay, yutes, hatzavonim, people who dye things, v'hapatomim, and the guys who fatten up animals and birds. So lokhim mursam, they can buy bran, mikol makom, from any place, and that means even from a choshud, and maybe, now bran comes from, is from the ground, it's not a fruit, so now there's a kishu, always could be of svichin. That could be a problem with svichin, and you can't buy svichin from people. So here we're saying, bran ultimately it could be svichin. It's a possibility. You can still do vein choshen shem svicha shvesu. You don't have to worry that it comes from svichin, because svichin is only usher mid rabbanon. So therefore, it's only a suffek rabbanon. And even if maybe it was, even if a choshed sells it, so therefore it's not so sure that's going to happen. And therefore, you don't have to worry. We're more lenient in rabbinic situations over there.
I thought bran was part of the wheat. Is it?
But it's still it's a sviach as opposed to fruits. Fruits are on a tree. Remember, the whole problem with svichim is the guy could be planting it and grows quickly. Although maybe you could have thought it could be a problem with svichim, we're not concerned for it because it's only rabbinic in nature. If the guy says it's not svichim, we'll believe it. Okay, chaf. Interesting halacha. Gaboi kupa bashvis. So let's say now the gabbai who collects tzedakah. So sometimes you collect money, sometimes you collect food from people. So he's going around and it's a shmita year and he's collecting food that people are giving from in a shmita year from their crops. So maybe you'd think that there could be a problem that people are giving some of the foods that are not proper foods. Maybe they're giving them svichim or things that you're not allowed to eat. So maybe there's a concern that people are giving food that's not allowed to be eaten because I guess they're going to give the stuff they don't need. Yeah, okay, the gabbai's coming. I'll give him stuff that I can't eat. So I'll let him give, you know, prohibited stuff to the aniyim. So we can give that out. And if, matter of fact, in Nesl Fas, even if they give bread, which could be a byproduct of svichim, muteris, it's allowed. We're not concerned that maybe it's from svichim that rabbinically you're not allowed to eat. Why? Because Jews, as bad as they may be, some of them, we don't suspect Jews who would give stuff for tzedakah that is prohibited. We assume they're going to give either directly money that came from shvis, or stuff they bought from shvis, In other words, they're going to get kosher stuff they're going to give, and we're not going to assume that they're going to give bedafka things that are not. Because a yid at the end of the day, you know, if you're giving tzedakah, no matter how bad you are, you're not going to give prohibited produce for an ani. Maybe you could maybe sell it, people, maybe. But prohibited stuff already in the category of tzedakah, you got to really be a low-down person, and Jews aren't that low-down. Final halacha to end this parak. What about in terms of if you have an ani and you want to help the guy out? The guy is poor, and you want to give him fruits, and you're going to make it in a way to help him out in lending it to him and not buying it from him, but really then you're really giving it to him in a way that he'll benefit from it. So let's see what the case is. Umutar lilvos min ha'anim perosh shviz. You're allowed to lend from the anim, or better, borrow from the anim, fruits from shviz. Now, this is before this man beer. In other words, this stuff's going to get burnt very soon. The ani's got stuff that really isn't going to be very valuable soon. So he's got a lot of stuff. So you can make a trick for his benefit to, let's say, let him save face. He says, oh boy, you got a lot of stuff over there. So I'll tell you what, can you lend me all these perish fees? But not to buy them over here, because you can't give him the money of shviz. But you lend it. Minanim perish shviz before the time of the burning. Machzir lam peris. And then in the eighth year, you give them back fruits from the eighth year, but not the seventh year, because they may not eat in Kedusha b'shana shviz in the eighth year. So since he borrowed it from the anim, so it's not like you bought it from him. See, if you buy it from him, then they may keep it after the shas beer. It could be a problem. You want to help the ani. So you say, okay, I'm going to borrow stuff from you. It's the stuff that really the ani can't use. And then afterwards, if he would have bought it from him, or then it's a problem, because then it'd be Kedusha shviz. But now you're going to return fruits from in the eighth year, and now you're giving stuff that has no Kedusha shviz at all. So this is kind of way that you can help the ani out. I'm going to borrow from you stuff in year 7. Not that the guy really needs the stuff, and he may very well be burning the stuff himself, but at least he's setting up in a way that I owe you stuff, but I'm not buying. And then I'm returning in the 8th year, I'm giving you non-shviz crops, and that way the ani will have a lot of good food in the 8th year. And that
the borrowing isn't dissolved with hefker and all that?
Well, you can always give it back.
Okay.
You can always give it back. The guy can't ask for it back, but you can always give it back. Okay, we'll stop over here.